All right, Bang Bang. Today is Friday, September 25th. Welcome to the Dog Walk presented by Barstool Sports. As always, we're talking a little true crime. Courtney is back. Courtney, what's going on? How's it going?
It's good. I missed you guys. It's good to be back on a True Crime Friday.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. The people missed you. And today's topic was one that, as we kept digging deeper and deeper, was a pretty interesting one. And I know when you hear the word strangler, obviously, if you're listening to the episode, you read the title of the episode before you press play. Strangler is now synonymous with Dwight Schrute and The Office and the Scranton Strangler, right?
Oh, yeah. That's all I could think of. I might slip up and say Scranton Strangler during this podcast.
Yeah, so don't be alarmed if you're an office fan. You know where we're coming from. But it turns out that there was actually someone who went by the moniker of the Boston Strangler in the 60s. That's who we're covering today. So we'll get into that. But before we do, I obviously want to talk about our friends at JP Graziano's. So it's Friday. Obviously, we got a big slate of NFL on Sunday. We got a big slate of college tomorrow. The SEC's back. It's going to be, you know, there's the football bonanza. There's NBA on. There's NHL. You pretty much, there's sports wall to wall. And, you know, obviously to pair your sports with something delicious, you can get some JP Graziano. So whether that's a catering tray for, you know, the friends sitting there watching the games, or whether that's some the Jardiniere or the Muffaletta, order at TasteRealChicago.com. Make sure you're getting in on this right now, because obviously it just makes everything better. Courtney, you've been enjoying some JP Graziano, right?
I love JP Graziano. Yes, it's one of my, it's probably the thing I miss the most now that I don't live in Chicago.
Yeah, so go do that.
I can order it, the muffaletta.
Exactly. You're out there in Boston, so you know where to find it. TasteRealChicago.com. If you're outside of Chicago, or even if you're in Chicago, you want some peppers. If not, if you want a sandwich, go to JPGraziano.com. Order it, pre-order it, whatever you got to do, just make sure you put it in. Make sure you let Jim and everybody know. And go visit them at the new walk-up window. Tell them Eddie sent you, and you'll get a free punch on your punch card to get that free sub sooner. JP Graziano, support the show. And go support them. All right, so let's get to the Scranton. I said it. I already fucked up. I already did it. I already fucking did it.
It's gonna happen again.
I know. Okay, Courtney.
Yes.
Take me to the 1960s in Boston, and the Boston Strangler.
Let's do it. So let's go to June 1962, because that's when it seemed to start. But between June 62 and January 64, there was 13 women in the Boston area that were sexually assaulted and murdered. They were between the ages of 19 and 85, so very wide age range, which is interesting. But there were a lot of similarities between all of them. The first victim was 56 years old. Her name was Anna Slessers. She was sexually assaulted with an object and then strangled with a belt from her robe. And she was found in her third floor apartment in the Fenway area. And that was kind of what most of the incidents looked like. Most of the victims were strangled with like either their underwear or nylon stockings or some sort of clothing. The oldest victim actually died of a heart attack, I think, during the attack. But yeah, mostly strangled with some sort of clothing, and would be the strangler would tie the thing around his neck, would also like leave it in a bow, like to kind of present it when the body was found, which was kind of creepy. And then, you know, the final victim in 1964 was 19 years old, and kind of the same thing. She was in her Beacon Hill apartment, sexually assaulted, nylon stocking around her neck, and she was found there too. So that's really like the, in a nutshell, that's kind of what you need to know, I think, about the, what actually happened. The rest of the story gets really interesting.
Yeah. And it was kind of mass hysteria, right? Because first they found out it was just older white women predominantly. And then they found out, hey, it's not only happening to them, like it's happening to younger women. It doesn't matter what kind of person it was. It's just women were being targeted in the Boston area, and people were kind of freaking out at this point because they all had the same cause of death. So, hey, naturally, everyone's like, we got a serial killer on the loose.
Oh, yeah. People were obviously freaking out. Women did not feel safe. It also seemed that even though like the age range was super wide, all the women were either like widowed or single women. So the guy must have been doing his research a little bit and following them.
Mm-hmm. And then during this time as well, another kind of predator, a rapist, gets found, and here's where the connection starts to happen.
Police were also like, the strangler was on, like, people know of the Boston Strangler. He's on the loose. They're trying to find someone who had committed the murders. But at the same time, there was a series of rapes being committed in the area as well. And the police were looking for the man who committed those rapes. And he was nicknamed. So you have the Boston Strangler who was doing the murders. But you also have this other guy who had, they were searching for, who was going by two nicknames. One was the Measuring Man, because he was getting into women's apartments by saying that he was a modeling scout and he needed to get in and take their measurements to see if they could be a model. And then the other one was the Green Man.
Yeah, the Measuring Man was wild. So he would just call up women and be like, hey, let me come and take your measurements. I'll pay you X amount of money if you do it with your clothes on. I'll pay you even more if you take your clothes off. And he was able to kind of talk women into sleeping with him. And then there were some women who obviously turned down his advances and he would just rape them. So he became very known for this, and he was on police's radar already for just like, hey, who's this Measuring Man? And that was kind of the name he had. So kind of a creepy, actually very creepy way to kind of, you know, I mean, there's no non-creepy way to go about being a predator, but very creepy in the way he did this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But then the Green Man was also, cause he was wearing like a green suit to look like a janitor or like a handyman. And he would say he was like there to fix things in the apartment. And sorry, I forgot to mention, but talking about this, he never had to force entry into these apartments, cause he always had like his whole shtick to get in. And something interesting with the Boston Strangler murders, there was never a sign of forced entry in any of those cases either. So just a little similarity there.
Yeah, and the Green Man, what they said he liked to do is he would walk up to buildings, you know, where you'd walk in and there'd be like 32, you know, doorbells. And he would look for a woman's name and he would kind of press his luck. He'd be like, okay, Mrs. Stevens, how's it going? This is the maintenance man, or this is UPS or whatever. And they would just kind of, you know, be like, okay, come on up, even if they didn't have a maintenance call or anything. And that's how a lot of it went down, unfortunately.
Exactly. So in October of 64, a man entered a woman's home in Cambridge and he, you know, did one of his shticks. He goes in, he rapes her, and he actually like ran out saying, I'm sorry. And she called the police and described him, like, gave a, you know, description of his face, and they actually were able to identify a man from her description. And the man that they identified from that was a man named Albert DeSalvo. Mm-hmm. And that's now like the first time we kind of have a name that goes with all these like nicknames you're hearing.
Yeah. So Albert DeSalvo, he's a 33-year-old construction man, I believe. And he kind of seemed like almost like a run of the mill dude, right? As far as like looking wise and
you know, I would say,
yeah, he wasn't like, I didn't get any immediate creepy vibes from him when I saw his picture. You know what I mean? Like there was no Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, kind of look mugshot, or no clown with John Wayne Gacy. I would say the vibe was not as off with him, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair to say. You definitely like, yeah, he didn't, I mean, Dahmer like just gave me the chills when you said that, because he had like a crazy fucking look in his eye.
Big time.
But yeah, so now they like were able to identify this man from the woman's description. They put his picture out, and when they did that, like tons of women came forward. I'm like, oh my God, he attacked me. So now it's like people are just, women are coming out saying, yes, that's the guy that attacked me. So then they arrest him, and he gets arrested for the rapes we're talking about. We're just talking about the Measuring Man and the Green Man rapes. And when he's arrested, he's sent to Bridgewater State Hospital, which is kind of like southeast Massachusetts, I think. And that's a place where criminally insane go. So they sent him there because they thought he was mentally, you know, ill and unstable. So he's there and he's awaiting his trial for the rapes. But this is when it gets interesting, because while he's there, he befriends a fellow inmate and he decides to tell his inmate that he is also the Boston Strangler. And he confesses to all the Boston Strangler murders.
Okay, so now here it's like, okay, we got this guy on these rape charges. Now he might be an even worse person than we thought. He might be responsible for these 12 deaths, and kind of gets under the microscope for that stuff too.
Yeah, but it's weird because like no one was buying his confession. So, and it's interesting because like he checked all the boxes, but there was no physical evidence to link him to any of the murders. And in his confession, he left out like a lot of details that I guess he just didn't give like he didn't seem to know as much as someone who would have committed the crimes.
Yeah, because it should be noted that what the Boston Strangler was doing to these women was like super weird. Like, I mean, it's very vulgar, but I believe there was one case where he left a broomstick like kind of inserted in the woman. And there was another one where they kind of like left her legs open. There was something with a bottle, wasn't there? There was just a whole bunch of weird shit where it's like almost like this person was so fucked up that he was playing these games with how these women were being found in these brutal poses. So the police specifically, you know, as they do, they leave details out. So it's like, well, if people know these details, they clearly might have been in on it. So that's kind of where they went as far as the salvo goes.
Yeah, and I was like, so I was interested in why he confessed this when he was there. But so the guy he confessed to, his name was Jordan Nasser, and he had a really good attorney, I guess. So DeSalvo wanted his advice and help. He wanted his attorney, and he wanted him to help him. He was like, I'm going to be the Boston Strangler, and I'm going to sell my story and capitalize on it and become famous from it. I guess he was like really fixated on becoming famous.
Yeah, and this is where the Boston Strangler story kind of takes a turn and makes it even, I mean, you hate to say interesting because obviously people's lives are at stake, but I guess it's where it takes a turn, and this is why it's like so kind of in the news and it's so well talked about even today, because nobody really knows what's going on with this guy because people thought he was full of shit.
Yeah. And it's funny, like everything I listened to was like, they would say Albert DeSalvo, the self-proclaimed Boston Strangler. Like no, it's always like a qualified with, you know, Boston Strangler, like, isn't him.
Yeah. And we could get into that. That's cause that's kind of where we go next, right? It's like after he confesses to George Nasser, it's, I guess the police and the public kind of don't know what to do, right? There's kind of a different, public opinion versus what the police believe.
Yeah. So they actually end up kind of doing nothing with the confession in a way, because he goes to trial for the rapes. He actually never stands trial for the murders, because when he's on trial for the rapes, the jury sentences him to life in prison. So they're kind of like, oh, you're going to go away for life for the rapes. Like, we don't really believe that you're not credible enough to believe you did the murders. So like, we're good. They send him back to Bridgewater State Hospital, and they were just kind of like, that's where you're going to stay for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And it was such a weird kind of predicament, I guess, for the Boston Police Department. Cause it's like, we want, you know, people to feel safer and be like, well, yeah, if that's what, you know, makes society come back together, being like, all right, if this guy did it, but they still didn't want to pin it on him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There was like a, like, I guess, I don't know how to put it perfectly, but it's like people were, it was almost like the media was content with saying he was a strangler, right?
Saying he was a strangler?
Yes.
Yeah. But it's so weird that like, yes, he's a strangler and he's locked away for life for the rapes, but like, wouldn't you want closure and like to pursue the, it was weird. Yeah.
It was very strange how they were like, okay, we're just going to send him away. He may have done this. Let's kind of sort of pin it on him, but like, we still don't really think this guy did this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was split. I think some people didn't buy it at all. And I think some people did, or it was just easier to believe it. It made people feel safe that he was away. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, this is where I think this is the most interesting part of the story. Actually, there's a lot of interesting things that happen after he gets sent back to Bridgewater State Hospital. But he goes back in January of 67 to begin his life sentence. February 67, he's there for a month. He escapes the prison with two fellow inmates.
Very interesting. Yeah. Like they get out, one of the other inmates like reaches his hand through like the little door that you see in movies that they push the food tray through, and he picks his way through. They get three of them, get out, they scale the fence, and they just kind of split. And then it's like, oh shit, there's a manhunt underway because the Boston Strangler is now out on the loose again, you know?
Right. So we were just saying like, everyone feels safe. He's away. Nope. Now he's out on the loose, full scale manhunt, like you say. So he ends up in Lynn, Mass, which is like 10 miles north of Boston. He like set up a little bed for himself in a cellar, I believe, in like some random people's backyard, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was just like listening to the radio in there, and he was listening to like people, the news, give updates of the manhunt for him, and he was just in there hiding out.
Yeah, it was pretty strange. And then he police ended up, he got called by a store manager and was like, hey, we're pretty sure this is DeSalvo. He just escaped. And, you know, the cops came and he gave himself up pretty easily.
Yeah. He just went to that store that you're talking about, store manager. He just went to a local store and he asked to use their phone. And when they asked who he wanted to call, he said F. Lee Bailey, which is his lawyer, who the lawyer became pretty famous for representing him and representing some others. So they the store owner, when he said that, immediately was like, holy shit, this is the Boston Strangler. So he sent another employee to the back of the store to call the cops on another phone. But while they were waiting for the cops to come, the guy who owned the store had a cup of coffee with him and was just chilling, talking. And I heard an interview he did and he said, he straight up asked him did you strangle all those women? And DeSalvo said, quote, I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. I know I did some of them.
Which is so strange. And this is where it comes into. So obviously they get him back. They throw him back in jail.
But he goes to a different jail this time because they're like, yeah, we're not sending. You're going to the freaking hardcore max security place now.
Yeah, a very strict one. Yeah, which he didn't want to go to. And that's where he's like you said, max security. He's really locked up. And that's where it gets really interesting, where people are just shouting from the clouds that this guy's like a phony. He just wants to be famous. There's nothing to this. And he admits to it, like you said, to his inmate or his fellow jailmate or whatever. But on the other side, he doesn't admit to everything. He tells the store owner, I think I did some of it. So clearly just a weird kind of strange guy.
Yeah. And I read something that, you know, all these people that we talk about have these psychiatrists study them and evaluate them. And I think he got diagnosed, or people felt like he had multiple personality disorder. So something I read was he may have done all of them, but he might not remember. It could have been different personalities of him doing them, so he might not have recollection of it.
Yeah, it's like that movie Split.
I don't think I saw that.
No, it's the M. Night Shyamalan or whatever.
Oh,
it's
one of those.
You know, he's just he's just a split personality. No, I hear.
Oh,
you.
Yeah.
And then, he's in this maximum security, and that's pretty much, would soon be the end of DeSalvo. What were you going to say?
Before we get into that and what happens when he goes to the Walpole, which is where the max security is, I don't know if you noticed this, but when I was looking up things to watch on him and listen to, I kept coming across a movie called The Boston Strangler, but it said it came out in 1968. So I was like, what? That makes no sense. How could a movie have come out so soon about it? But it's really interesting because while this was all happening, there was a reporter who was writing a book about it. This guy named Gerald Frank was following all, he was a journalist, but he was following everything that was happening in Boston in the 60s and was writing a book about it while it was happening. So the book got published in 1966, which, he went away for the rapes in 64, which is crazy. And the book went and did great. It was a big time hit. So that guy bought exclusive rights to sell to DeSalvo's story. And DeSalvo's family was promised 15% of the cut. But they ended up, the guy tried to stiff him, but they had to sue. Salva had a wife and kids. We didn't even mention that. So they had to the wife and kids had to sue to get the money. But anyway, so then the book blows up, 1 million copies sold in the first 2 years. 20th Century Fox comes in. They buy the film rights. So while this is kind of happening in real time, a movie's being made about it, which is so crazy to me.
That is strange. And I guess when it comes to present day, it's not the strangest thing anymore, right? We've seen tragedies happen, but I guess never when there was a fugitive at large.
Yeah, right. So, it wasn't even fully, when did he escape? He escaped in 67. The movie came out in 68, which is just insane.
Yeah, the timing is kind of weird there, huh?
Yeah, and it grossed to $18 million in the box office, which would be the equivalent to $138 million today.
Oh, so that's a pretty big hit.
Yeah, people were really fixated in this story.
Yeah, no, I guess that really shows the scope of how big it was for sure.
Yeah, sorry, just a little side note there. I was so confused by I was like, this can't be right. I want to watch the movie on this, but this says it's from 1968, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really getting made kind of at the time it was happening.
Yeah, and then he, in prison, I think it was, years later, he was murdered. He got the Dahmer treatment by another inmate. So it was kind of a quick run there for DeSalvo. He was supposed to be coming out with a book, with the George Nassar and like kind of explaining it all, and never got to see the light of day because he was murdered.
Yeah. So a couple interesting things about that too. So I guess he called a forensic psychiatrist like the day before he was murdered, because he knew it was coming. So he like called this guy cause he was starting to fear for his life. He recanted his confession right before he died too. Said he didn't do any of it. So, the people who don't think he did it, there you go. But yeah, so he was found, I guess, November of 73, he was supposed to go to his job in the prison where he worked. I think he worked in the prison infirmary, and he didn't show up to his job. So the guards went to go find him, and he was in his cell stabbed 37 times.
It's a lot.
I liked this little nugget though. There's a lot of theories as to why he was killed, but I'll get to that in a second. There was three people who were put on trial that they were suspects in killing him. They were all found not guilty, but one of the guys, his name was Robert Wilson, and he was a member of the Winter Hill Gang. I don't know if that means anything to you. That was Whitey Bulger's gang.
Okay.
And yeah, they were based in Boston, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. That definitely is interesting. That I'm sure. I mean, that was the same time period, and Whitey Bulger was a fucking big time deal around then. So that's very interesting. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I think that's pretty much the gist of the story, right?
Yeah, there's like all these theories as to why he was killed. Like, since he was working in the infirmary, he was supposedly getting involved like the drug trading in the prison, and like the other guys who kind of ran it were getting mad at him. So they wanted to put an end to it. There was something I read that there was like, he got in a fight with someone over sharing food. There were something else I read that like that he wasn't actually the Boston Strangler, and he knew too much and was going to say who the real Boston Strangler was.
Okay.
So there's tons of theories. I don't know. I'm not sure which I believe there. But there's also some like kind of funny, weird things that happen in prison, like that we've talked about in the past with other, serial killers. You know, do you remember when we talked about how women kind of fall in love with these guys in prison?
Oh yeah.
He had one of the weirdest ones. So became pen pals with a lot of people. He was pen pals with this like 11-year-old boy, which is weird as fuck. Oh. And his mother separately. He was corresponding with both of them. And the mom left her husband because she was in love with him. And they started referring to each other as husband and wife, and as the kid as their son, even though he had his own dad. Really weird. Yeah.
It's very strange. And, you know, they're very different in many ways, but in some shades, it does kind of remind me of the Golden State Killer. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, he's got like a multiple names, like he preyed on women. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really a bad looking dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see it.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like there was like weird.
Yeah, stuck into their houses.
Yeah. Like weird little, obviously they did it in a different manner. But there was weird little consistencies where I was watching. I was like, oh, this kind of reminds me of James D'Angelo.
Yeah, yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
So if you're familiar with that, like this is this would be a good one for you to kind of research up on. But it was interesting nonetheless, like just knowing that still this many years later. And I think the 2013 DNA finding is what kind of is the most damning, I guess, puts kind of the proof in the pudding where he most likely was.
Yeah.
The Boston Strangler.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I know it's in a weird way, it's a little bit of a bummer that they found that because it's like, oh, well, all these theories are kind of interesting. But yeah, in July of 2013, they tested semen that was found on Mary Sullivan, who was his final victim. They exhumed her body and they like did a bunch of tests. They linked it to DeSalvo's nephew. They took DNA from him. They said there was a familial match, and that was enough to say like that. It was like almost a 99% chance it was DeSalvo. So then they exhumed his body, tested him, and it came back as like a dead on match that it was his semen on her body.
Which was huge because to my knowledge, that was the first time they actually had some DNA, some concrete proof that it was him.
Yeah. And that's like one of the biggest reasons they never believed him is there was no physical evidence to ever put him on the scene of a crime. So there you go.
There you go. Yeah. So, but you know, who knows if he did all of them, but that's one main one. So
yeah.
I'm inclined to believe that. I'll just go with that this guy.
I believe the DNA.
Yeah, that he was taken away. But yeah, crazy case nonetheless. Mm-hmm. The 60s in Boston must have been a wild time. They said people were, you know, moving out of the area, locking up the doors, and just kind of scared for their life. So probably an insane time.
Yeah, I read like women were getting tear gas and like all this crazy stuff to protect themselves with. I would have done the same thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I think that's it, right, Court?
I think that's it. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. It's a good, it was kind of an interesting one to read up on. Didn't know much about it. And yeah, it's, I don't want to say cool because that sounds like a sick thing to say, but it was kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. So go check some things out. I watched a biography doc. You listened, so you started a podcast?
Yeah, it was called I think it's just called The Strangler. The Stranglers. The
Stranglers.
Plural, because I think they are people who think that it might have been more than one person.
Ooh, there you go. So yeah. go check those out if you're interested in more. This was kind of just like a little taste into it of how, you know, the what happened and what, you know, what people think happened. So that's it for today, everybody. That's it for this week. We'll see everybody again on Monday.